Our study tonight is out of Mark's Gospel, Mark chapter 9, verses 9 through 13. Christ's work to clarify the historical importance of the cross before the crown. We learned in our first lesson in this series that Mark's Gospel presents the perfect service of God's perfect servant Jesus, with Mark's focus of having rebounded unto upright service from personal failure. I remember he had gone on the first missionary journey with the Apostle Paul and Barnabas, and he washed out on that first journey. He ceased going with them. There was some hardship or some discouragement or some disillusionment, we're not told, but he didn't go with them to the ministry. And what's interesting is that Mark overcame that. We can trace through various of the epistles how Mark was put on probation. And then he actually, near the end of Paul's life, he said, please send Mark. He's profitable for me and the ministry. Well, that's the Mark that wrote this gospel. So he understands what it's like to be a poor servant and then to rebound and become a good servant. And most scholars believe that Mark's gospel was actually the first one that was written as far as time and the timeline is concerned. It would have been the first book that would have been written in the New Testament. It's very early. But anyway, whatever led Mark to abandon the ministry in Acts 13:13, it would have included his failure to focus upon and so value the eternal rewards that awaited his enduring whatever ministry difficulty he faced. Well, Jesus' disciples held to the Hebrew scribes' teaching that Messiah would reign when he appeared, not suffer, die, and then be raised before he ruled. So they needed to be taught of the historical importance of the cross before the crown, not only for Jesus, but for God's saints throughout history, including them in Mark 9:9-13. And incidentally, there's also, for the believer today, there's a cross before the crown for doing what the Lord wants us to do. We each have a special cross that the Lord has assigned us. It's difficulty or trials or burdens or whatnot, and that's part of the plan of God for us to go through that en route to the crown. I want to read the passage and then we'll look at it. Mark chapter 9, verses 9 through 13. This is just after the transfiguration where Jesus has been transfigured into his messianic glory. And the disciples, Peter, James, and John, have seen it. They're coming down the mountain. And most scholars believe that this is Mount Hermon. Mount Hermon is actually a snow-capped mountain year-round. Very high. It's way up in northern Israel. And as they came down, verse 9, from the mountain, he charged them that they should tell no man what things they had seen till the Son of Man were risen from the dead. And they kept that saying with themselves, questioning one another what the rising from the dead should mean. And they asked him, saying, why say the scribes that Elijah must first come? And he answered and told them, Elijah truly comes first and restores all things, and how it is written of the Son of Man that he must suffer many things and be set at naught. But I say unto you that Elijah is indeed come, and they have done unto him whatsoever they listed, as it is written of him. Now Mark doesn't point out who the disciples recognized that to be, but Matthew chapter 17, 12 and 13 tells us that the disciples then understood that Jesus was talking about John the Baptizer, John the Baptizer being the Elijah who was to come. Anyway, while Jesus and his disciples were descending from the Mount of Transfiguration, he charged them to tell no one what they had seen until the Son of Man, that's the Lord Jesus himself, a messianic term that is used in Daniel chapter 7, verse 13, and Jesus was fond of using it, until he was risen from the dead. Jesus was obviously teaching them of the coming of his cross before his messianic crown. The disciples had seen Jesus in his transfigured form, seen him in the glory that he would be exhibiting when he was here on the earth, when he was ruling this kingdom. But from then on, he kept talking about the cross, the cross, the cross. This didn't make sense because, remember, they're Jews. And Jews thought that when their Messiah came, he would rule. He's not going to a cross. It was unthinkable that Messiah would be crucified. So when Jesus talked about his death, his burial, his resurrection, the disciples didn't know what to do with that phrase. They wondered, well, maybe he's talking figuratively. Maybe he's talking spiritually. They just questioned it. But Jesus kept predicting and predicting and predicting so that it would get into their memory bank so that after the resurrection they would recognize, wait a minute, this whole thing wasn't a mistake. This crucifixion thing, he'd been talking about that for years. So that's why Jesus is, and that's incidentally what Jesus often and God does in our lives. He will put things into our memory banks even though we might not see the relevancy of them now. But in time we're going to see how important they are. However, the disciples, reflecting their Orthodox Judaism, believed Elijah, or one like Elijah, would come as the Messiah's forerunner, that the Messiah would then appear, and connected with the kingdom, the godly dead would be raised to enter that kingdom. It's interesting, Daniel chapter 12, verse 13 is told that. The angel told Daniel that he would die before these events about the tribulation period would occur, but he would rise and stand in his inherited lot at the end of the day. And that meant a lot to Daniel because, remember, Daniel's been taken captive ever since he was 17 years of age. He's captive over in Babylon. But in the resurrection, he's going to be back in Israel, and he's going to be back in his inherited property. And Daniel was one of the royal seed. He was of the line of David. So he was going to be back somewhere in Judah, and he's going to have his property in Judah, and he's going to be raised. Anyway, thus, when Jesus, who had just been confirmed by the vision on the Mount of Transfiguration to be the Messiah, told of his rising from the dead, they were not sure if he somehow referred to the resurrection of these deceased Old Testament saints or some other event in a figurative sense. So they asked Jesus why the scribes said Elijah must come first. Their thinking was as follows. The presence of Elijah at the transfiguration that they just witnessed, the confirmation of Jesus as Messiah, and his references to the resurrection in verse 9 suggest that the end of all things was near. If so, where was Elijah, who must come first to prepare the nation spiritually for the Messiah's coming? Now, it's interesting that I was actually asked by my wife earlier today, Elijah predicted to come? Yes. In Malachi chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, this is the last two verses of the Old Testament, just before the New Testament period. God says, "Behold, I send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." So the Jews knew that Elijah was coming, but they didn't know, is this a type of Elijah? Is it going to be Elijah resurrected? Is it going to be Elijah sent back from heaven because he was actually raptured? He went to heaven in a chariot. Is God going to bring him back in a chariot? How is he coming? They didn't know. Incidentally, Orthodox Jews to this day, when they celebrate the Passover, they have a chair at the end of the table with a big pillow on it. And during the Passover, the little boy, the oldest child, boy, is asked to go to the little door and see if Elijah has come. And he comes back and says, no, he's not yet. But that chair is for Elijah. They're still waiting for him to come. They don't believe that John the Baptizer was the Elijah that came. Anyway, perhaps the disciples thought Elijah's work of renewal would mean the Messiah would not need to suffer. We don't know. Well, Jesus realized that his disciples were affected by the teaching of the scribes, but he could not let them think that he or God's saints in general were not to suffer before the crown. So he clarified the timetable of events, sharing tremendous insight on God's program of all believers to suffer before a crown, including us. First, Jesus supported the scribes' claim that Elijah must come first, before the Messiah, and that he spiritually restores all things through spiritual renewal. Now, we know that John the Baptizer did this. Remember when John, and we've covered this already, when John came preaching out in the wilderness over in the Jordan River, the Bible says that all the city of Jerusalem went out to him. Even the leaders, they had the Pharisees and the Sadducees going out. Everybody in Judea, which is a province right around the city of Jerusalem. Everybody in the Transjordan area, that whole area, came out to see him. Apparently all Israel was affected. And it's interesting, John didn't have to come preach to them. He was preaching way out in the wilderness, but a couple of people heard him. And the Spirit of God was so effectively using that man that people were attracted to him, so they went out to him. So a fascinating thing. He was certainly a very powerful servant of the Lord that God used. So, second, Jesus added that the scriptures predicted that the Messiah, that is the Son of Man, must suffer many things and be treated with contempt. Now the scribes knew this, but thought that the Messiah would vanquish his foes who mistreated him and then establish his kingdom in his first advent. The idea of a Messiah being crucified was absolutely unthinkable. No Jew would accept such a horrible thought. So that's why when Jesus was on the cross, the disciples of all people were very, very disillusioned. They thought, whoops, is he really the Messiah or isn't he? Of course, Peter and James and John had seen his glory when he was transfigured, but it must have been very difficult for them at that point anyway. Well, second, Jesus added that the scriptures predicted that the Messiah, the Son of Man, must suffer many things. However, number three, using the strong adversive particle Allah, that we would translate, but rather, this is not the God Allah in Islam. We're not speaking Arabic, this is Greek. We should translate it, but rather, Jesus strongly stated that contrary to their awareness and the realization of the Hebrew scribes, and likely contrary to the knowledge of even John the Baptizer himself, who had denied that he was the predicted Elijah to come in John 1, 19 and 21, John the Baptizer had indeed come in fulfillment of the arrival of Messiah's forerunner as a type of Old Testament Elijah, but that Israel's rulers had done unto him whatever they wished, as it was written of him in the sense of the mistreatment of Old Testament Elijah, how he had received at the hands of Israel's evil rulers, Ahab and Jezebel. In verse 13, Jesus makes a very interesting statement. But I say to you that Elijah is indeed come, and they've done unto him whatsoever they listed or whatever they wished, as it is written of him. Elijah was mistreated. Remember, Jezebel threatened his life, and so he fled for his life. And they looked for him, and he had to hide at Brook Cherith and so forth. So he was a persecuted man. He wasn't put to death, but he was persecuted. And so since John the Baptizer was coming as the Elijah, he would have been persecuted. But he was not only persecuted, he was actually beheaded by Herod Antipas. And just as Elijah had been mistreated, so John the Baptizer was mistreated. And it's interesting that Jesus indicated that he was the one who was to come. I find this absolutely fascinating because in John's Gospel, John chapter 1, verses 19 to 21, when he was asked if he was the Elijah who was to come, John actually denied it. He did not know that he was the Elijah who was to come. For some reason, God decided to hide that truth from him. Verse 19 of John 1 says, and this is the record of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, who art you? And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, I am not the Messiah. And they asked him, what then, are you Elijah? And he answered and said, I am not. Now he didn't know that he was. He didn't know it. Art thou that prophet? And that's the prophet, the Messiah. He answered, no. And then they asked him, who art you? And he said, I am the voice, verse 23, of one crying in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord, as is said of the prophet Isaiah. So he did not know that. It's also interesting to note that in Matthew chapter 11, where the disciples of John came to ask Jesus if he was the Messiah or if they should see someone else. Remember, John is in prison. And John is very disillusioned because he thought that when he was presenting the Messiah, the Lord Jesus, was going to rule. The last thing he expected to do was to land up in prison and then have his life threatened. So John was saying, have I made a colossal mistake in my ministry? Did I present the wrong person? So verse 2 of Matthew 11, when John had heard in the prison the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples and said unto him, are you the he that should come, or do we look for another? Jesus answered and said unto them, go and show John again those things which you do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, the poor have the gospel preached to them, and blessed is he, whosoever shall not be offended in me. And as they departed, Jesus began to say unto the multitudes about John, that he was a great prophet. But Jesus did not wait to tell the disciples there. He waited for John's disciples to go. Why? Apparently, it's like the situation of Job. John was a greater prophet than what he himself realized. God did not want it to go to his head. He wanted John to remain faithful and follow him. So he didn't reveal to John the effectiveness of his ministry and the importance of his calling. When he got to heaven, he found out, but not before. That's very, very important. Anyway, back to Mark chapter 9, verse 13. Elijah has indeed come, and they've done unto him whatsoever they want. See, Moses and Elijah were the two greatest prophets in Israel's history. And so if John had found out that he was the Elijah to come, it might have been too much for him to handle with his ego, and it would have gone the wrong way. As it was, God kept him in the dark about it. Well, Christ's implication was clear. Just as men mistreated and slew John the Baptizer, the Elijah who was to come as the Old Testament Elijah was mistreated, so they would slay the Messiah before he rose from the dead. Here's a principle involved. With God's people, there is a cross before the crown. That's happened throughout history. It happened with Elijah, happened with John the Baptizer, happened with Jesus. It happens with Jesus' followers. That's par for the course. So, Jesus taught that he was to suffer and die before rising and ruling, akin to how John the Baptizer predicted Elijah to come, was mistreated and slain, and how Elijah himself had been mistreated by Israel's rulers. So, may we realize that God's program has long included his saints bearing a cross before the crown, that we willingly bear our cross today. And then, as John likely did not know he was the Elijah to come, we may not know how the importance of our own ministry efforts. So may we eagerly bear what cross assignment we have of God. Last Wednesday night, and this is my closing illustration, last Wednesday night, we had a lady in our church who came up to me and she said, "Pastor, I've ministered to a lot of people outside of our church, and there have been prayer requests over the years that I've brought to this prayer meeting group, Epoch Church." And our prayer meeting group often consists of, 15 people on the average, give or take. Sometimes it's been as low as 4. Sometimes it's been, I think the high after 9/11 was 22. Anyway, we had a lot of people that night. But generally around 12, 15 people. But she said, "Pastor, I have noticed for many years when I bring a prayer request to this group and I mention it, even if we might not remember to pray for it or cover it," she says, "the prayers get answered with a high degree." So she says, "That's one reason I want to come, because I want to leave my prayer request here because I want answers to prayer. This is a church that has real effect." And she went on to give me testimonies of how lives have been transformed, people that we don't even know. We've prayed for them because of these prayer requests that have come up. I think in this, and I was thinking of that in reference to this lesson, I think that we're going to be stunned. Someday God is going to sit down. "Oh, all of you folk at Nepal, listen, I want to tell you something." And he's going to open up and show, "This is how I used you. This is how I used your prayers." Another thing, there's a video that has been made of the Trudeaus. They're our missionaries. We've been supporting the Trudeaus, Jean and Carol Trudeau, since they first went out to the Philippines. They have done a tremendous amount of work. There were no Christians there at all. And now they have national workers, men, who are in turn evangelizing and discipling others and producing leaders in the church. And that's happened over the years, over the 30-some years that they've been ministering there. And we've had a part in that. We've been supporting them. So from God's perspective, all the monies that Nepog Church has been piling in into the Trudeaus to help them is something that there's going to be a credit for the people of Nepog Church who have given toward that. And someday we are actually going to sit down with these believers that we don't know now. And we'll be able to converse with them. And they'll be able to tell us how they were saved out of witchcraft, out of demonism, out of spiritism. And that's, and Gene testifies of this, and Carol testifies of this. So we need to be encouraged. If you're bearing a cross right now, a difficult cross or a painful cross, one that causes grief, be encouraged. The way God is using you, he may not feel at liberty to share with you now because it might go to your head or my head, okay? But he is. He's making hay with it. And there are no little people in God's program. Everybody is important, and everybody has a very critically important job to do. So may we stay faithful to the Lord.